You're listening to 90 Day Soulmate with the relationship engineers, Jim Golnick and Lisette Guevara, only on LA Talk Radio.
Welcome to 90 Day Soulmate with Lisette
and Jim.
Today we're talking about Carl Jung and archetypes.
Sounds interesting.
It is. Archetypes in relationships to understand more about yourself and the people you meet, to kind of get an idea of their personalities, maybe what we think their personalities are, and potentially how come our own vision of the world impacts how we view others.
Yeah. Everybody see different.
You were talking about the mirror, that people are mirrors of what we think.
Mm-hmm. So we can see.
We can.
An example.
But let's go. I want to go back to the, a couple of weeks ago, we talked about somebody who is a thief, you know, and they've been stealing things their whole life. They view others as thieves as well, because what's in their heart, in their subconscious as acceptable, they think others are that way. Just like people who are really trusting of other people.
Sometimes.
Or they're very trustful people. They tend to trust other people. So if you're finding that you're trusting people too much, it's because you may be seeing other people as...
Who you are.
Yeah. You may be a very trusting person because you are a very trustful person. Not saying that's bad, but realize if you're a very trusting person, it doesn't mean everyone you meet is somebody you should be able to trust.
Yeah, and also this, the article that I read talking about the shadow that you have is when you see in the mirror the other people, and this is how you project.
The shadow, which is something we're going to talk about. Carl Jung talks about the shadow, and we will talk about what that is and how it impacts us, as well as how it impacts how we see others. Let's go on with Carl Jung and archetypes in relationships. Today's subject is brought to you by Carl Jung, who was born in 1875 and passed away in 1961. I'll go through what's on this list here, but I'm going to take it off the screen. What I find interesting was, you know, I hear about Carl Jung and Freud and all these people, and I think they're like hundreds and hundreds of years ago. And now for many of you, 1961's a long time ago. But being born just a few years later, all of a sudden I didn't realize Carl Jung was around, you know, mid-1900s.
So young. Sorry.
Thank you. Cut. Very good. You are the jester. We'll get to that. We'll see. She just likes having fun all the time. It's
sometime.
That. So this is part of the things we're going to talk about. We're going to talk about 12 archetypes that Carl Jung and today people have taken and twisted a little bit, redefined them because, again, he spoke in a different language. He wrote in a different language. And as always, we like taking other people's material. We, not only we, but everyone, and kind of contouring it to the information and the presentation and the way they want to present it. So what we have are archetypes based upon Carl Jung's 12 archetypes, but they're also used in literature, in marketing, and today we're going to talk about them in that sense as well as in relationships. So he was the son of a philologist, which I had to look up. I'm like, what is that? I thought, you know, like Philadelphia's city of brotherly love. So maybe his dad was a love doctor.
Oh, that's
so not
deep.
It.
Yeah, indeed.
But philo, I guess, is the origin of language.
Yes.
So it's he's a language, was a language. Studied languages. And he was also a pastor. He was a member of the clergy.
Okay.
As such, Carl Jung, in his youth, would look at his dad and his parents and his teachers and go, why do they act the way they act? You know, some teachers who are really strict, some who are very kind, some who get people to do stuff because they lead, they're a leader of the class, others who make a class enjoyable. Why do people act the way they act, and how do they go through life doing that? So he was very observant as a young child, trying to learn these things. He focused also on his father's failing faith. Mm-hmm. His dad, who was a pastor, was starting to lose faith. The faith was starting to dwindle over time. And Carl Jung, as a child, had a lot of dreams, very vivid dreams with different characters. And he took that as being partly spiritual and partly, hey, what is that? And that kind of led him on to developing further his dream theory, which turns out to be in conflict with Freud's dream theory, which we'll get into later. Mm-hmm. He was expected to become a member of the clergy and or go into medicine, because that was a lot of his family was in that
area
of study. But he had philosophy interests, kind of like Freud did. Freud got into philosophy a little bit, and then he went into psychology. And Carl Jung became a psychologist, or should I say psychiatrist, in what year is that? 1902, in Zurich, Switzerland.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's where all the money is, psychiatry.
He born
in Zurich.
There. Where he born?
Yeah, I don't have where he was born. I apologize, but...
We search him.
We'll look. He was born.
In some place.
He was very young when he was born.
This is my joke.
That's your junk. Your junk.
My
your junk. Your
my
joke.
Joke.
You're young. So he was actually a collaborator with Freud in 1907 to 1912. So he was a little bit behind Freud, and they did work together and collaborated on different subjects. He was going to be the next leader in the psychoanalytic movement. So he had a lot of respect by the community. They thought very highly of him. In fact, he was elected to be president of the International Psychoanalytic Society in 1911. Mm-hmm. Why couldn't they come up with smaller words? His dad was a philologist. Couldn't he come up with like the Brain Study Society or something? Anyway. Then he resigned in 1914 and had strong disagreements with Freud, which kind of led to his split from Freud. And they never collaborated again after that point.
It's called a psychology divorce.
And they both had to go seeking therapy about their split up.
Yeah.
Can we get back together? I don't know.
It's so deep.
It is. But in any case, he disagreed with Freud. Freud's theory of neuroses, when he had to work with psychoanalysis of patients, he always went back to some kind of sexual origin of neuroses. So Freud, everything was, something going on with sex.
Mm-hmm.
Jung disagreed with that. And his philosophy was, or his theory was more well-rounded. Some of it was in trauma, some of it was in the innate things that are born into us.
Okay.
Which some of that has to do with the archetypes. Like archetypes weren't necessarily things we learned as we grew up, but some of them, he said, were born in. They were innate programs in our mind, these different archetypes. We'll tell you what those archetypes are in a minute so you can understand what we're talking about from archetype standpoint. Let's keep going here. Carl Jung brought to us the theory of the collective unconscious and, of course, archetypes. The collective unconscious is that deeply within us, in our brains, we have thoughts and patterns that are part of our DNA that have been passed on. And this is where there are these archetypes existing, that there are things that are programmed into us that are universal, no matter if you are born in China or Russia or the United States or Venezuela, that there are certain things that are born into us. And that actually helps us all bond as humans, because we have certain traits that are universal. Just like we have the universal traits of expression,
mm-hmm.
there are certain subconscious or unconscious traits that are born into us that can tie us together as a people.
Okay.
That's his theory and our little twist on it. Let's keep going on that. This collective unconscious exists in the deepest part of the mind. It's genetically inherited. And again, this is his theory. It doesn't mean it's true. It doesn't mean it's not true. It's a good explanation of certain things. And that's what psychology sometimes tries to do, is supply an explanation, or at least a theory, not shaped by personal experience. So even though we act and we behave based upon personal experience, he is talking about the collective unconscious being pieces to us which exist prior to being shaped by our culture or environment.
Mm-hmm.
So collective unconscious, a common set of archetypes, beliefs, behaviors, drives, motivations that are unconscious.
Okay.
Prior to our world existence, or should we say, prior to learning from the world.
Okay.
Archetypes are instinctive patterns that are put into our brains, our subconscious, unconscious. They're universal characters, and we'll get into what those characters are. They're expressed in our behavior, as well as the images we see in our minds, in our dreams, and also when things are in our subconscious, unconscious, it allows us to recognize things in life and also put a bias on them. It gives us a feeling. It gives us a recognition, like, oh, I see that. I feel this way about it, and I don't know why. So signs, symbols, or patterns of thinking and behaving that are inherited from our ancestors.
Yeah, some theory talking about that we have, like, the five-generation program in your own brain. Sometimes you don't. You don't know, but it's there. It's
right.
Unconscious.
And that can be family programming.
Mm-hmm.
What Carl Jung seems to be saying is it's beyond that, because it's beyond your family. It's all families everywhere have this programming.
Mm-hmm.
Universal. I don't know what it is, but it's part of being human. And I don't know if, as a human with our brain structures, if we naturally feel certain things to how people act, how people look, how they carry themselves. And we take our inner self and reflect it on our outer world, and therefore our outer world becomes what we think it's going to be based upon what was born into us. Ooh, that's very deep.
That just looks like the AI that I saw yesterday.
AI?
Yeah, because that's
artificial
the principle.
Intelligence.
That's the principle.
Oh.
So they mirror one to the other and you create more knowledge. So.
And they can recognize things that they already know in patterns, and they build off those patterns.
Mm-hmm.
So if they're given a set of patterns to begin with, then they build upon those patterns, kind of like what we do.
But I also communicate. So the for example, when you put a 20 drawing travel in one area, they
yeah.
can connect each other. So the data that he have, he can replicate to the other. So these know what it is, watch and simultaneous time. So
that's what kids do today. That's what we do with our phones, where we're on a group chat with a whole bunch of people and we're simultaneously sharing information. We all learn.
Yeah, sometimes.
Yeah, we all learn that Madonna had facial surgery. That's what we learn.
Okay.
Yeah, but not
so deep.
You know, unimportant
okay.
stuff.
Okay. Keep going.
Will do. These archetypes, the universal unconsciousness that affect us can affect our deep-seated beliefs. He supposed or proposed that the similarity and universality of world religions across the globe was due to these inborn innate structures in our brain that kind of, when religion came out of people,
mm-hmm.
when different cultures had spiritualness, they developed a similar sense of what that was based upon it being a universal thing that was in us in a deep-seated belief, which I think is a good thing, is that if you're yeah. born already with a sense of commonality with people around you before you learn anything, I think it's a good thing
yeah.
if what you're born with, and what we're all born with are good things.
Yeah.
But we judge what's good based upon our initial understanding of what's good, right?
That is right, what is wrong, yeah.
Which actually talks in this little chart here about that next. Morals, ethics, fairness, and what's right and wrong could be something innate to us. And it's also genetically inherited unconscious. It's in there. Phobias. Carl Jung talked about the fears and social phobias that can manifest themselves in children and adults. They can do it for no apparent reason. And part of what he said is potentially it's something that's genetically been passed on to certain people. And the fear of the dark, it's been shown that fear of dark, loud sounds, bridges, or blood in certain people, they react in certain ways. So, for instance, darkness activates an inflated response by the amygdala without prior negative experience in some people. So some people react this way, but they haven't been programmed to be scared of the dark. They're just scared of the dark. So what Carl Jung said is this is an indication that his theory could be correct. And lastly, dreams. And this is where he veered off from Freud, that because of the archetypes represented, specific symbols in dreams are universal. That the, what do you call that, analysis of dreams, however, is extremely personal and requires a lot of knowledge of the person. Even though they're giving you a symbol or a sign that could be interpreted universally, how that is interpreted based upon, and we'll call it the language you're speaking, the language of that person.
The context, the whole knowledge.
That you need to know the person in order to do that. And then dreams and the archetypes in our dreams, and this is what he thought, that dreams help us express what we consciously can't because we just don't have the ability to do it. So in our dreams, where our mind is potentially more powerful, or at least we're not controlling it consciously, it can give us information that we can't get. And he thought it was highly important that we are able to listen to or hear what somebody's dreaming about, because we can potentially deal with issues through psychoanalysis, therapy, dream analysis, that someone can't express consciously. The dream and the interpretation of the dream may provide more information than that person can consciously provide without having relayed that dream to somebody who can interpret it.
And also for when we talking in Victoria Dream, in one chapter, we talk about when your emotion, because when you're dreaming, maybe the emotion part is sleeping, and maybe your brain, this is our own theory, the brain start to create image a situation. So when the emotion coming down, maybe the knowledge can be working better versus when you are awake, you have emotion, maybe you're blocking yourself.
Absolutely correct. Is that with the limitations of our conscious mind go away, the limitations we put on ourselves, the emotions, and perhaps the dream releases different thoughts in our mind and pieces them together in a way that we can't communicate or even think about consciously. Mm-hmm. When we come back, we'll talk more about archetypes in relationships here on 90 Day Soulmate with Lizette
and Jim.
Tired of attracting the wrong type of guy, it was time to give something else a try. She got her computer and started to plan and created a process to find her man. Soon she went on a perfect date, and then she knew it must be fate. In just 90 days, that is all it took. How she found her match? It is in the book.
90 Day Soulmate is brought to you by 90 Day Solutions. Welcome back to 90 Day Soulmate with Lizette.
And Jim.
Today we're talking about archetypes in relationships. Carl Jung, his theory of universal consciousness, universal collective consciousness of all of us, and archetypes and how that is an inborn, innate piece of who we are as humans, which leads to other things. In reading upon this, I read archetypes. Oh, here there are four basic archetypes. And then the four basic archetypes really aren't archetypes. They're just ways of relating to reality, like, say, consciousness. Like, and let's get into what people talk about. So we're going to talk about four basic things that we can relate to our life, not the 12 archetypes yet, but the four basic pieces of who we are. The persona, this is what we give off. This is how we interact with the world around us. It's the masks we wear. It's how we act in the different social contexts. So if you're at work, you may act a certain way because you need to be professional, and it may be a more formal presentation of who you are. If you're at church or if you're in a ceremonial setting at a funeral, you're going to act a certain way that we put on. We act appropriately for, but that's just the appropriately or appropriateness of how we act. But you also may dress a certain way. Where, like, at home, you can wear sweatpants and do certain things. And when you're out with friends, you may be a certain way. When you're on social media. So I think part of this is we talk about how our culture, general upbringing, help contour our persona. We adapt to our surroundings, and we either try to fit in or protect ourselves. So I think one of the examples is they talk about Batman. So for Batman to be a crime fighter, he put on that suit. He had to interact with his environment with this protective, scary suit as a bat. And that was his persona for a crime fighter.
And also not be recognized.
Not to be recognized.
When he don't have the mask.
But what was interesting, one of the people writing about this also talked about, or was Bruce Wayne his persona? And he really was Batman. He was Batman, really? But he pretended to be Bruce Wayne. He put on the mask of Bruce Wayne to interact in society. Where down deep, he was really Batman. Don't know. I wonder. Boy, I wonder.
I am Batman.
Not Batman. Next, the shadow. The shadow is that dark, repressed memories and thoughts, or those dark, repressed memories and thoughts. They're unappreciated aspects of a personality. They're not only unappreciated, but they're unnoticed. This is based upon Sigmund Freud's unconscious mind. So this is where their two theories kind of overlap. It's realized in the form of automatic responses, meaning we have automatic responses to things where we don't know why, but it is part of our biases and prejudices that rise up unconsciously with unintentional consequences. One of the examples is I go to work and I think I know what I'm doing. So I act mean to others around me because I think they're annoying and I just want to get my work done. And it could be that I think this, but I really don't think this. It's unconscious. It's shadow. My subconscious, unconscious thinks I'm better than other people. So I act mean to them and I don't realize that that's what I'm doing. And I'm not doing it purposefully. It's just how I come across. And now I start thinking about it, go, oh, crap. Sorry, I do that.
Is it your shadow part? Is it show up now?
The shadow knows.
Yeah, the shadow knows.
The shadow
sound.
Knows.
The shadow sound.
So what else? Oh, the third part of this is the anima and the animus. The anima representing femininity in a man's psyche, and the animus represents masculinity in a woman's psyche. It's basically the mirror of the. The mirror of your own psyche. So it's how you relate to the feminine qualities if you're a man, the masculine qualities if you're a woman. It's just basically that whole biology versus gender play within your mind.
So this theory is gone in this society.
No, it's still there.
We don't have feminine masculine.
But the culture, upbringing, and our experiences shape our perception of the world and give way to the ideal picture of a man or a woman. And then how do we fit with that? And then how do we interact or interpret?
Yeah.
And then, whoops. And lastly, the self, based upon all those things, who we are, how do we act with the world around us, the ego, and we talked about this over the last number of weeks, that the ego is what merges the consciousness and the unconsciousness state to give rise to the self. So I'm going to go back to our little diagram here, which I don't think I can right at the moment. But anyway, the whole of this interaction of our subconscious and conscious, our surroundings and our ego is what Carl Jung said was the individual. Mm-hmm. This is what creates that unique person, which no one else is like. Our unique experiences also lead to more individuation, or the more unique, singular personality, yeah, and uniqueness. So we actually grow in that uniqueness, like a seed. So you'll recognize this chart. Hopefully you can see it. If not, it's the chart that has the ego in the middle. That's us. That's how we plan, calculate, defend from being hurt, protect ourselves, programs. It is where consciousness meets unconscious, where our and again, we talked about the id a little bit, right? So the id last time we said is the subconscious programming. This is where the id is, I think, where Jung would say the inborn DNA passed on traits that bubble up into our personality come from the id. Mm-hmm. And I think this is where he builds upon Freud's theory. So I'm ignoring this for a moment. I'm going, this is us facing, this is like the persona, how we face the environment through the ego. And the ego is impacted by the superego, our morality, values, and beliefs, which can grow over time, the patterns, unconscious guilt, and all that. And then also the id, the unconscious drives, repressed materials, patterns, again, the shadow that's behind us, that we reflect in society. And you brought this up, is that mm-hmm. your shadow, you see your shadow in other people.
Yeah. And this is the way that you project your emotion. So when you have your shadow, you see the other people is your mirror, and then you project these kind of stuff. So this is the way they be careful how you talk or criticize somebody or be upset with somebody. Some people say, why you're upset with that person? See in different ways, because I project my own shadow and this. And the people activate, you know, some event can activate different people in different way.
I agree with that. And I want to go back to the shadow, I believe, actually exists somewhere between the id and the superego, because part of the shadow is that inborn personality, but part of it is also those values and beliefs that we do learn over time as we become more of that individual. But they're the subconscious ones, the ones that aren't consciously in our mind, but are reflected, as you said, on the other person. Like when we have this underlying feeling of being unhappy, but we don't actually think we're unhappy. We see somebody else and we think, oh, they're unhappy. But we're not judging ourselves. We are judging them based upon how our shadow is.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay, I can agree with that.
Thank you. Finally. Oh?
Any more shadow? I think you were talking about
You are my shadow, so.
The shadow. You were talking about a gentleman giving a seminar, and in the middle of the seminar, a person walking in from off the street, obviously drunk, stumbling and falling, and then the reaction of different people in the audience that person.
Mm-hmm.
Explain a little more about that.
Yeah, so the when he walking in, the first is a woman say, oh, he's a poor guy, take care, please. And the other guy is running at the end of the room because scared, because he's a criminal. They maybe want to stolen everybody in the room.
Mm.
And the Euro guy get up and take the guy and say, okay, take a $1 and take a coffee. You leave the room. This is wrong. And the other woman say, oh, you saw me. Why you put people out? And, and so everybody is criticized, reacting each other with the same event. So the speaker is also talking about this topic and say how this mirror project everybody, and he classified by the reaction for each people in one simple event.
So when we come back, we're going to look at a situation like that and look at it from the standpoint of different archetypes. The 12 archetypes that are used by Jung, by literature, in marketing and things to represent people and how they act, and see, would these people act differently in that type of context?
Yeah, situation.
And situation. We'll see you in a moment on 90 Day Soulmate with Lizette.
And Jim.
Here I am again at the bubble tea bar. Oh, being single is not so bad. You go to parties when you want. You have the freedom to do what you want. But I want someone to share my life with. I'm afraid to get hurt again. Keep your head down. Don't look. Don't make eye contact. Oh, no. Pretend you didn't see her. She's attractive. But probably not my type. She's... probably a Scorpio. Too controlling. But she sure is pretty.
Tired of attracting the wrong type of guy, it was time to give something else a try. She got her computer and started to plan and created a process to find her man. Soon she went on a perfect date. And then she knew it must be fate. In just 90 days, that is all it took. How she found her match? It is in the book.
90 Day Soulmate is brought to you by 90 Day Solutions. Welcome back to 90 Day Soulmate with Lizette.
And Jim.
Today we're talking about archetypes in relationships, which before now we kind of talked about it just generally speaking. But once you understand these archetypes and how people are, you can see more of yourself maybe as an archetype, the behavior you carry, and if you understand that this might be subconscious and unconscious, it may be something that you really can't change, maybe don't want to change, or maybe you recognize other people and where they are and how they are, and understand the same thing, that if you can't change them and they don't want to change, then you have to decide, is this the type of person that you want to be able to spend time with?
Is the way that you learn to interpret and understand people.
In everyday situations, too. Yeah. So it's not only relationships, but it could be business, people you work with.
Family.
Sure,
family.
Oh, I like that, family.
Yeah.
And to know that a lot of this is passed on. So if this is passed on generation to generation in DNA for a million years of evolution, and it's inborn in a lot of people around the world because they have the same similar archetypes in their cultures, then you got to understand maybe that people see other people in these archetypes as well as they see themselves as an archetype. And as when you see and believe that you are a certain archetype, then that's the direction you're going to go in. And there's not a lot of changing involved. So find a matching archetype. Let's get started. The 12 archetypes and their qualities. The Jungian archetypes have made an impact on modern day professionals, business strategies, and the entertainment industry. We see these archetypes every day all around us, and they are leveraged for stereotypical marketing value, yet they are potentially innate parts of our psyche. Mm-hmm. So they are leveraged to get us to do things. They're in books, they're in movies for us to understand a character. Because if you had characters that weren't predictable, it'd be really hard to follow a storyline. And we want certain characters. We understand certain characters. Let's go and get into these, and let's see what's the next one here. So the first archetype is called the sage. Somebody who's a learner, free thinker, lives for intellect and knowledge. They want to learn more stuff. They seek to understand the world. They always have facts, quotes, logical arguments, and a whole bunch of research papers.
Oh, that's his cue.
To back up. Well, what's interesting is you'll see that sometimes people are multiple combinations of these.
Yeah, that is what I think right now. So you have a 12 stuff, or maybe we have punches one to other and in different moments. So it's not put a label, you are number five or number 10.
But you'll see these traits and qualities and go, okay, how much are you a free thinker and you want to develop your own facts, your own knowledge, your own information, and you live your life by solving equations. I need this to fit.
Yeah.
I need this answered. So that's one, the free thinker, the sage. The next one is somebody called the innocent. They're always looking for self-actualization, self-help books, trying to figure out how to become better. They're positive and they search for happiness. They're looking for happiness. They see the good in everything and everyone. They want to please other people and want nothing more than to be accepted.
Wow.
You know this?
Yeah. He's innocent.
Innocent.
Somebody that's an innocent. Really innocent.
Yeah, yeah. They just, everyone's good, no one's bad, I want to love and be loved, and that's what they seek.
Everything.
Everything is awesome. Oh, maybe that's, that is the character, I guess.
Yeah, maybe.
But the explorer, this I found interesting. They're bold and travel without a clear path. Their whole idea is to explore. They're open to novelty and adventure. Hey, you want to go to this vacation? Sure. Can we climb a mountain? Yeah. Can we do it, you know, naked?
Yeah.
Sure. I mean, it's like just try new things. And they have a deep love with discovering new places and new things about themselves. They are seeking for perfection and never satisfied. So the explorer, if you find somebody who's really exciting to be with because they like doing this and doing this and doing this, they may be with you for a little bit and then they want something new, right? Because they're... They're exploring. They're just exploring. Like James T. Kirk, right? He explored all sorts of life forms everywhere in the galaxy. He was an explorer, always looking for something new.
Number four,
the ruler, which is the leader, classic leader who believes they should be the one to bring order to any situation. They're stable, they strive for excellence and wants everyone to follow their lead. Oh, they have so many reasons why others should listen to them. You should listen to me because I've got experience. You should listen to me because I know where I'm going. Hey. And therefore can become a tyrant.
What does it mean?
A tyrant. Bad. They can, kind of like, not an outlaw, but you need to follow me. You know, they become tyrannical.
Okay.
They become T-Rex. They're like T-Rex.
Let me explore.
They become like T-Rex. Tyrannical Rex.
Okay.
They are that dinosaur called Tyrannical Rex.
Number five.
The creator. So their desire for freedom because... So it's kind of like the explorer in a way, but they want to transform things. They don't want to find things. They want to take something and make it different. They want to make it completely new. They're clever. They're nonconformist, and self-sufficient. They can make new words up as they're talking. It's amazing. Imaginative, good-humored, but can be inconsistent, and they like to think or plan rather than do. So they're like, oh, let's try this, let's try this, let's try this. Well, let's just do something.
Oh, no.
So another one, huh? You got that
one? Bunch.
Yeah, it's another one. So that's the creator, wanting to do lots of stuff, but really not doing it.
So that's the name that you use when we met? Yes.
The caregiver. They feel stronger than other people. They need to take care of other people. They offer a certain amount of maternal protection to those around them. Protects people from harm and prevents risks from threatening other people's happiness. Maybe too much. They play it too safe. They may turn... Ooh, this is when it goes bad. They may turn into a martyr who consistently reminds everyone of their sacrifices. I took care of you. I didn't go to work because I had to take care of you and get you to school every day.
I guess that's happen when it's extreme, but people can have a soft of these. And I remind me of a friend that she take care of a lot of people, but and also she, we walk in the museum.
Yes.
And we saw the sculpture of the museum, and the comment is, how many people were sacrificed to do that?
Oh.
So when you see the beauty in the museum and she see the sacrifice part, it's because they take care so much people.
Take care of the others, sure.
It's interesting, the poem, yeah.
So that's a different...
Number seven.
Seven is, this is interesting because this is like another one as well. This is like the creator in a way. This is called The Magician. Great revolutionary, likes to change things, regenerate and renew, constantly growing and transforming. So it's changing things, transforming and growing. I want to try to figure out why this sounds different than the creator. Their mood can be contagious, but they sometimes turn positive events into negative ones. So it's not creating to create something positive. It's just changing for the sake of changing.
Word revolutionary, you know, when the people want a revolution, never mind, is good or bad.
I want to change it.
Yeah.
Right.
So that's when we be careful. We say, I want a revolutionary because we know what happened.
So we want to create, if you're a creator, you're creating something new and better for everyone.
Mm-hmm.
If you're a magician, you're just changing it.
Yes,
like change-o presto.
Mm-hmm. Never mind what happened.
So now I made the person disappear, and now I made them reappear, and I cut them in half.
Yeah, and they become the hero. Yeah.
Hero? Well, let's see about hero.
Uh-huh.
Let's see where we are next. Next. Oh, look at that. Speaking of
hero,
you see?
Wow, I read the future.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Focus on power and strength above all. Uncommon vigor and resistance that they use to fight for power or honor. They'll do anything to avoid losing and never gives up. Maybe overly ambitious and therefore controlling. We need to do this, I gotta do this, I'm the hero, you
and
gotta follow
me.
And
also the event that you're talking about, the guy, the drone guy go to the seminar. The euro is the guy that take it. He put the dollar and put out based upon the view of everybody.
Oh, and I want to be, but I want to also be seen as, okay.
Yeah.
So like in that situation, we talked about the hero as I'm going to get this guy out of here and I want everyone to applaud me.
Yeah.
Because I'm the hero. But this is, again, in movies and films, you can see all these different characters and how they write them up. Let's see what's next. Oh, I'm thinking about the Avengers and different superheroes, where there'll be different superheroes and they get upset at each other because they want to be the leader, like where Batman fights Superman. I know that's not the situation in that movie. There's other things going on. But when you have multiple heroes, they want to control. One of them, that's their duty. They're the strongest. They need to control and direct.
Number nine.
The rebel, which I guess is kind of like the magician in a way, is a transgressor. Provoke people, don't care about all other people's opinions. Don't think at all about other people's opinions. So the rebel just wants to go against whatever's going on. So again, like the revolutionary, the magician, but go against the grain and think for themselves. They don't like to be pressured or influenced and can become self-destructive because they will go against anything. They'll go against themselves instead of going against being healthy, they'll go against being healthy. Or saying, instead of being healthy, they'll rebel against that. So they just want to rebel against everything. And there's, you know, the movie, Rebel Without a Cause, where people, they're just fighting society. You know, I'm gonna dress this way to be different. And then all your friends dress that way too. What's next? Here we go.
The Lover.
We know people like this, right? All heart and sensitivity. They love, and they love to be in love, and they love to lavish it on other people. They just love, they live in love. Their characters in the TV show, we're just watching that. They want to be liked. They want to be liked by everyone.
Mm-hmm.
But they're so emotional also. Their greatest happiness is when they're feeling loved. They enjoy everything that's pleasing to the senses and value beauty above all. Beauty in art. Beauty in music, beauty in food, beauty in wine, beauty in people.
Mm-hmm.
That it's love and beauty everywhere, and they exude love, and they're some of the most wonderful people to be around. They can also be very draining because if you're not in that same mood. If you have had the same amount of wine,
you don't feed the love so easy, so you need more, drink more.
And maybe they lose a little bit of aspect of reality.
Yeah, but have some level, but
maybe it's a lovely sense of reality too. Mm. Rose-colored glasses. The jester. This is what we were talking about before when you were making jokes. They like to laugh even at themselves. They do not wear masks. So when we were talking about the personas, there's no persona. It's just them. They're not taking on a certain role or way of going about interacting with others. They're just being themselves and they're having fun. They're not, they try to break down other people's walls.
It can be lazy.
That's true. So if they never take themselves seriously because their goal is just to enjoy life, if as long as I'm having fun.
Keep in the patio.
Yeah. Don't need to do anything. And then the final person.
That's a joke. Okay.
What? Are they still out there on the patio?
Yeah.
The orphan, number 12, walks around with open wounds, feeling betrayed and disappointed. They want other people to take charge of their life and feel disappointed when no one else does. So be careful if you meet somebody and they want you to be in charge of their happiness. That's what an orphan can do in a relationship, right?
Yeah.
Spends time with people who feel just like them. So they'll actually will not be happy with somebody who doesn't feel like they're a victim. Right, they play the victim, and they have this other side which can be manipulative.
Mm-hmm.
Right, so they act innocent. They're the victim. They don't actually want to be around people who aren't like them, and so they want you to take care of them by manipulating you. But they will not be happy with you until you also are negative and a victim.
Play along with. Mm-hmm.
So we see that. And I wonder, like, if you see, you know, children today who are left alone more so than they used to be, are they, and maybe we see this with kids a lot, is that we see kids this way because they haven't had to face a lot of life. And so they are more innocent. So they have a little bit of this in them already.
Mm-hmm.
Because they are coming from that, I don't have the power to be an adult yet. I am innocent. People get things and I can't. Like, you own a house and I live in your house. Like, there's a little bit that we put people in the position of being, quote, innocent/orphan, and we have to not allow them to build that personality if it's not an innate personality. But
yeah.
Some people we know are this way from the beginning.
Or maybe we project our...
We could do that.
This person.
In any case, we hope these 12 archetypes, Carl Jung and his theories, the universal consciousness or unconsciousness, how we have these archetypes that are part of our personalities, part of our underlying DNA, that's his theory, might explain to you or help you relate to other people in a different way.
And watch out when you criticize somebody, maybe it's your Charon project.
Oh.
And this kind of mirror.
Yeah, so if you're criticizing, that's a great point. If you're criticizing somebody, maybe it's how you are deep inside,
mm-hmm.
and you're seeing it. And so when you see other people and you see how they are, go, maybe that's a sign of how I am.
Yeah.
Anyway, have a great week. Thank you for listening to 90 Day Soulmate with Lizette.
And Jim, I see you next week.
You're listening to 90 Day Soulmate with the relationship engineers, Jim Golnick and Lizette Guevara, only on LA Talk Radio.